This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio in good old Central Illinois, 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in McLean County and Bloomington Normal, 88.3 in Pontiac, 97.1 in Lincoln, from Sherman to Dwight, up and down the old double nickel. Remember, we're brought to you by you, and we depend on you, and we depend on your donations to keep our radio station going. So anything that anybody can give, we would be very appreciative to have it. Our number here is 309-807-2427 if you would like to make a call. Again, that's 309-807-2427. You can also go to our website, which is more convenient, and that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. That will tell a lot about ourselves and what we do, and you can listen to some of our programs there, and it'll tell you there how to make a donation. So anything you can give, we would certainly appreciate. We're going to have a great show for you today. I'm here with my wife, Lynn, and also we are going to have a special guest on today. We have a priest from the Peoria Diocese, and we'll get back to Father in just a minute. I'm going to ask my wife if there's anything she wishes to say, and then we'll start.
Hello. We want to welcome Father Tom Shaw to being with us today. We're so glad to have him. And he comes from Walnut, Illinois, is where he's stationed at, and has two little parishes up there. And they have a cheese factory, and I was just asking him about getting Limburger cheese, whether they had it. And he told me that it's kind of sporadic, whether they have it or not. My father used to love that stuff. Boy, did it stink. Okay, Bob.
At any rate, Father is a pastor at Walnut, at St. John Evangelist Parish up in Walnut, Illinois. And also he takes care of Immaculate Conception Parish over in Ohio. And both those towns are up in the northern part, right on the line in the northern part of Bureau County, just a little bit south of Dixon, Illinois, and not too far east from the Quad Cities. So he's right up in that area. Father used to be have the parish, I think, down at Elkhart, Illinois, and also one at Ottawa, Illinois as well. So and the reason we're having him on today is because he has both a typical and a unique story. Father is unique in the sense that he was not ordained until he was 51 years old. Father is now 71 years old. And his story is one where, as a young man, he drifted away. He was in a Catholic, born and raised in a Catholic family. Grew up with the oldest of five children, three other boys and one girl. And he became a priest late in life. And he says that he is considers himself a solidly Orthodox priest who ignorantly drifted away from the church before finding his way back by discovering the truth and beauty of the Catholic tradition. So his story is unique in many ways, and at the same time, his story also is typical in the sense that so many people, young people, as they get older into their teen years or a little past that, begin to fall away from the church. And maybe his story, I hope, can shed some light on why is it that so many young Catholics are ignorant of the faith and have to actually rediscover the truth and beauty of Catholic tradition before coming into the church. So I'm going to let Father tell his story. And if there's anything I left out in the statistics about your life, Father, before you start, be free to go ahead and fill us in. So we'll listen to Father's story.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. And good morning, Bob and Lynn, and those who are listening. One little humorous, or at least I make it humorous, thing about my story is I was born on Thanksgiving Day. Oh. And so I tell people that on the day I was born, there were great parades and festivities throughout the land, and the entire country gave thanks. And every word of it is true.
You were the oldest, right?
I'm the oldest, yeah. Yes. Anyway, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, which is where I'm from, in what I would consider to be probably an average Catholic family of the time. Although I would say that an average Catholic family in the 50s was a stronger unit than an average Catholic family today.
Because
we didn't have the whole culture going after the church and trying to destroy the church and our faith. It was supported at the time, even if it was only superficial.
Yes, it was.
Just ask yourself this question: what are the odds of today of a Catholic bishop being having a show on primetime TV?
So, right. Nil.
Anyway, my attraction to the priesthood, this was a battle. I compare myself to I just went blank.
Jonah?
Let me ask you, Father, you were born into a typical Catholic family of
yes.
the 1950s, probably a Catholic family that was just, secure in their faith, but mm-hmm. probably took it somewhat for granted, like many
yeah.
of us did. Maybe not especially enthusiastic over Catholicism, but something that was simply indigenous to their family, their history.
Right.
And then as you got older, what were some of the things maybe that made you start to put some distance between yourself and your church?
Well, it was probably some of the things that happened to my family. First of all, when I was about 10 or 11, my family moved from Brooklyn to San Diego. So you kind of uprooted from the neighborhood I grew up in, surrounded by other family, extended family, to a place we didn't know. And then within a year, my mother contracted tuberculosis. And in those days, she had to go into a tuberculin hospital, so she was gone from the family for quite a while, for several months, close to a year. And so here's my father trying to raise five young children. I said, I'm the oldest. I'm about 11 years old. And I'd like to say I was a very mature 11-year-old, but I wasn't. So here's a mother missing from a family, you tend to be able, as a child, you tend to be able to get away with a lot of things that you wouldn't have been able to get away with if my mother had been present.
That's true. That shows how important motherhood really is.
Yeah. As part of the turmoil that was going on at the time, I was questioning a lot of things. I've always been a questioner. I wish you could say I always asked the right questions, but I didn't. One of the things I began to question was my faith, because when I was living in Brooklyn, everybody went to church. My whole, as I said, extended family. My father's family, there were eight children, and they almost all lived around there with their families in the neighborhood I grew up in. So you went to church, that was just expected. So when my father was trying to take care of these kids with no mother, it was hard to get us all ready for church. I mean, he did the best he could. But I was kind of resentful of it at the time. And so without the support of the family support, the extended family support, the extended neighborhood support, it was easy to think, who needs it,
Right.
Yeah, that was one important thing I can remember, the neighborhoods, when we grew up, my wife and I, in a very ethnic town. And,
mm-hmm.
We grew up, my mother on her side was Lithuanian. So I can understand your experience. We grew up with, the Lithuanian church. My wife grew up with the Polish church. She lived in a Polish neighborhood. We lived at the edge of a Lithuanian neighborhood. And there was a lot of, community and a lot of tradition. And so I can understand what you're saying.
Yeah, so that was all kind of gone now. You're kind of drifting on your own, and since I was always kind of a questioner, as I said, Now, I should say one thing. Books have always been a large part of my life. I can't remember a time when I wasn't reading. And books figure prominently in my story in one way or other. So I was reading a lot of things that and questioning a lot of things. And I figured I knew better than God at that time. So,
didn't we all go through that?
Yeah, I think so. It was a question of, well, really, who needs God? But let me say this one thing. The one thing that kept me from getting too far away for a while. When I was growing up, of course, we had the Tridentine Mass in those days.
Oh, yes. I miss it.
And there was something at the elevation of the Eucharist as a child. I was always transfixed at that moment. That always captivated me. That kept me from getting far away sooner than I did, but eventually it lost its power. So in a way, because in the 60s the church was going through turmoil also with the very poor implementation of the Second Vatican Council. So there's a lot of confusion. So we had confusion in my family and a lack of a mother, and confusion in the church. And so, you know, I was smart enough to think, well, you know, this isn't making a lot of sense. So that's one of the things that's always key to my life. I was always looking for something that made sense. You know, that was my search for something that made sense. And I didn't see it because, as I said, of the turmoil that existed both in my family and in the church at the time. And within myself, I had this interior turmoil because I was looking for that thing that made sense. And so as I get into college, of course, you know, it's common that when you go to college, you lose your faith.
Yeah.
And it's still common.
Yes, it is. A lot of times it's sort of, sort of knocked out of you by the atmosphere of the college campus, I think.
Right, yeah. One of the things I discovered at the college was the library. So there, I wanted to spend all of my time in the library. It didn't make me a very good student. I had to learn to study once after I got into college. Eventually, I did, but I was finding all of these exciting books, and faith seemed like the farthest thing from me. I was drifting further and further away. And I actually, believe it or not, this is not much fun to talk about. When I got into my late teens, there was also something I should fill in, something personal that was going on with me, something physical. When I was my senior year in high school, I was 16 when the year started. And I contracted rheumatic fever. Now, that's a bad age to get rheumatic fever, because it actually can kill you at that age much more easily. It's usually something young children get. They can resist it better. But at that age, I was taken out of any physical activity classes.
Well, absolutely. Like, yeah, it can damage your heart.
Right, yeah. And it was not in my heart. It was in my arms and legs. But if it had gotten to my heart, it would have killed me. Taking out a PE, and I was told, don't even attempt to run 3 steps because it would spread. And I was put on a form of penicillin for over a year. And so on top of everything else that was going on, there was that. It made me very restless because I couldn't do things. And it made me interiorly restless. That's why one of my favorite quotes is from St. Augustine, which a lot of people know. Our hearts are restless until they rest in you.
Exactly.
So I was experiencing that without realizing it, because I didn't know St. Augustine at the time. So I had this on top of all of the other things that were going on, this illness, that it was cured, essentially cured within about a year or so. But I was highly susceptible to illnesses after that for a long time. And so in the meantime, I still have this restless mind and this restless spirit. What do I do with it? And so the church didn't appeal to me because, as I said, I thought I was smarter than God. And so I started looking elsewhere. You know the old phrase, "There but for the grace of God go I"?
Yes.
Well, I you know, looking for something that made sense, I went into things, looked into things that I would have been better to stay away from, such as occult practices.
You know? Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's dangerous stuff. I didn't know that then.
No.
You know, I figured I was above all of that. You know?
No, most of us don't. I guess that's why, you know, they say that.
That's why it works.
Teenage kids can go where angels fear to tread and somehow.
Yeah, I know. And it's more so now, I think. But I managed to find things. See, I'm very good at doing research and finding information, so it comes to me, so to speak. So I found things that I should not have found and explored them. But that was the one that was the most dangerous.
Well, you were looking for power, probably. You were looking for power over your life.
Yeah, probably, because, you know, my life was pretty powerless when you consider we left my hometown. My mother was gone for a while. I was sick myself. You know, well, this is all happening within about 5 or 6, 7 years. And it's kind of like, why is all this stuff happening to me? And I actually was, I think you're right, I was looking for power because, as I tell people now, my health didn't start to get better until I took control of it myself.
Yeah.
My health is pretty good now. You know, as I get older, I get healthier. So, anyway, so this was going on throughout my whole college life. I decided this is what it was going to be difficult to talk about. I deliberately decided I was going to commit mortal sins and still receive the Eucharist. Mm-hmm. Terrible thing. Terrible, terrible thing. But you know, I was unfortunately too afraid to commit a very serious mortal sin. So it was going to be something like, all right, you know, you're supposed to go to confession. You're supposed to not receive communion. You're in a state of sin. I was going to be in a state of sin and receive it and basically say to God, what are you going to do about it? Well, I'll tell you what he did about it. Whenever I received communion, even in the state of sin, I would feel a consistent phenomenon within my body, as though somehow I were being cleansed. It would happen every single time, and I hated it. I didn't want it to happen. I wanted it to stop. So I tried everything I could to get it to stop, but it never did. Now, the one thing I feel fortunate about is that I had enough integrity to say, I gotta find out what's going on here. You know, this. I don't know why this is happening.
It's supposed to, right?
Well, the sacraments work by the power of the sign itself. So,
right, exactly. Yeah, I didn't. I kind of knew this stuff, but didn't really know it. But I was experiencing it and not understanding what was going on with me. So anyway, this continued. My parents were very unhappy with me because of the way I was treating the faith that was so important a part of their lives.
Were they aware of what you were doing? Or?
Some of it, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
They were aware of my what I would describe as contempt for the church.
Okay.
So not wanting to go to mass, things like that.
Well, you know, we're coming up on a break here, Father, so we're going to stop here and take a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Catholic Spirit Radio wants to be sure our listeners in Central Illinois know about our active Facebook page. Highlights from our Facebook page include Mother Angelica quotes, special Catholic Spirit Radio events, plus links to podcasts and important information. We invite all our listeners to become a follower of the Catholic Spirit Radio Facebook page, because keeping in touch with you is important to us. Thank you for liking our Facebook page, listening to Catholic Spirit Radio, and spreading the word about our radio station.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. We're back from our break. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. And we're talking here with Father Tom Shaw. And he is a Catholic priest in the Peoria Diocese up in Ohio and Walnut, Illinois. And we've been talking about his unique situation and where he grew up in a Catholic family, fell away from the Catholic Church, and in later life, at age 51, came back in, not only came back to the church, but came into the church as a priest. So it's a very typical in many ways of what we go through, and at the same time, unique. So it's an interesting story, and I'll let Father pick it up from here on.
Okay, well, I've already kind of covered some of the things that brought me out of the church.
Okay.
I mean, let me try to now talk about some of the things that brought me back in.
That would be very interesting.
Okay. It first started when I was taking a college course in a graduate seminar in medieval English literature. English was my major. And in the class, we were told to read 10 selections from books either from or about the Middle Ages seminal works. One of these selections was from St. Augustine's Confessions. And it was his actual conversion itself with St. Ambrose. And I didn't know at the time that my teacher was Catholic. So, and I read that, and my reaction was, I know this man. I'm experiencing what he experienced. And so it started me thinking, okay, maybe there's something going on here. Next, I encountered a book. Yeah, I told you books were going to figure prominently, called The Road to Damascus. It was published in the late 40s or early 50s, and it was stories of converts and what brought them into the church. And so I'm reading this, I'm thinking, well, this is beginning to make sense. as I said, I was looking for something throughout my life that made sense. And their stories and what they learned, these were beginning to make sense to me. So then I thought, well, let's find out what's really going on here.
And isn't that why it's so important? Stories are so important.
Oh, they are.
They really are, because they tell us so much about ourselves and our own lives.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we are all sort of a living story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, and it's an aside, when I was coming to the Diocese of Peoria and taking the psychological exam, the instructor, or they were scoring it as I was taking it, and she said to me that I do well with intellectual or abstract issues. She said, but most people like stories. And I kind of smiled to myself. I love stories, you know. I think Jesus said something about, did something with stories. So anyway, so I find this book, The Road to Damascus, and it begins to change my mind. And then I thought, I got to look more deeply into this. So I started to look into church documents, encyclicals and things. And as I'm reading through these, I'm thinking, so that's what the church really teaches. It's making sense. And so I was looking for more books. And at the time, in San Diego at the time, there was a bookstore run by the Daughters of St. Paul. And they had a talk one time by Carl Keating, who had established Catholic Answers. And he had his book published, Catholicism and Fundamentalism. And he gave a talk, and I went there and heard Carl talk, and I got a copy of the book. And then I learned that their office, Catholic Answers office, was pretty close to where I lived at the time. So I used to go over there and hang out and talk to people there. And I got to know Carl and Mark Brumley and Pat Madrid and all of these guys. And so my faith was now beginning to grow, you know, because Catholic Answers was helping me, these guys from Catholic Answers. And so I finally thought, I had reached a point where I I couldn't stay away anymore, and I had to go to confession. I thought, well, where am I going to go? I really hadn't gone to church much for a long time. And so since this road back started with Augustine, and there was a parish in San Diego that was run by Augustinians, I thought, well, that makes sense. let's finish it where it started. So so I went there, and I had a very long confession. And at the end of it, the priest said, "Welcome home." And
wow.
I felt as though I were being welcomed home. And then I discovered later on that this had come to a peak. This thing about not. I had to get there during Holy Week. I didn't even realize it was Holy Week. So, you know, that's the week when now we have leading up to reception into the church. So it was as though God were using Holy Week to get me back into the church. So because as I said, I had to go. I had to get the confession. I had to get back. Now, I wasn't thinking much about priesthood at the time, but every time a vocations director came to the parish, they sent him to me.
How old were you then, Father, at that time? Now, how far have you
gone? I was, let's see, I would have been in my mid-30s, probably.
Wow.
Okay, so it took a little while longer. And I thought it was more amusing than anything else because priesthood just wasn't on my radar. So now I thought, I think I need to go on a retreat and get a spiritual director.
So following Augustine, really, I don't think priesthood was on his radar for a long time either.
No, it wasn't. But at least I never became a Manichaean. So. anyway, the pastor at the parish recommended a Jesuit retreat center. He said they do it better than anyone else, and at that time they did. This is before they went off the rails, a lot of the Jesuits. And so I went for a retreat, and I didn't know what to expect. But I felt at one point I had to talk to a priest. So I talked with the priest who was the retreat director. He asked me if I was a convert. I said, no, but sometimes I feel like one.
Yeah.
And it turns out that he was in charge of the library at the retreat center.
Boy, that's a theme that seems to be dripping.
Yeah, so we became friends, and over the years, before he died, we met from time to time. And at that point, the idea of priesthood was returning, and I wasn't very happy about it. I really didn't want to be a priest. So at this time, I'm probably in my early 40s. I figured I'm too old. So I asked my spiritual director, and I figured he'd say I was too old. What he said was, "You'd be a good candidate."
Well, you know,
and that was not what I wanted to hear.
Well, that's something, you know, that I was going to mention, and somewhere along the line, I think someone who goes into the priesthood at your age knows for certain what he wants to do, or else he's being dragged by something that he can no longer resist.
Well, that's what it was. I was dragged by something that was no longer exist. Well, eventually the Jesuit Retreat Center had to close down because they were developing the area around it. And then I found a Carmelite Retreat Center. And my first night there, they introduced one of their members who had just finished his studies and was getting ready to be ordained a priest. And his name was Jan Lundberg. And that night, he and I talked for about 2 hours. And when I was getting ready to leave, he said to me that he was being put in charge of the bookstore. Did I have any ideas for good books? I said to him, well, you've come to the right place, because we hadn't really talked about that. Then a little while later, I got an invitation to his ordination, which was in Long Beach. It was a couple hours from San Diego. And I thought about it and thought about it, and I thought, well, I'll go because I've never seen an ordination, and I might never get a chance to see another one. So after his ordination, I just wanted to just kind of say hello and leave. So I saw him, and he reached into his cassock and pulled out a an invitation to a reception at his parents' house, which was also in Long Beach, which was the next day. And he wanted me to go there. And I didn't really want to, and I thought, well, I'll go. You know, why not? So I got there. I walked in, and I saw Jan, now Father Jan. I went up to him to say hello. And one of his sisters was taking pictures, and she took a picture of us and put the camera down and said, "I don't know you," to me. And this is what Jan said. He said, "This is Tom Shaw. I became a priest yesterday, and he's going to be a priest later on."
Wow. A lot of signs in your life, that's for sure.
Yeah. So later on, I asked him, "Why'd you say that?" Hoping he'd say something I could simply dismiss. And what he said to me was, "Well, you have a good mind. You know the theology, and you're trying to build up a church." And I really couldn't argue with that. So now it got serious about the priesthood. And I thought to myself, my driving factor was I just can't go through the rest of my life wondering. Because I knew this. I knew at that point it wasn't going to go away. So I decided I'd look into it. And I was trying to determine between a religious community and diocesan priesthood, and I decided on diocesan priesthood, and I was accepted into the pre-theology program for the San Diego Diocese. So now I'm in the seminary. Okay, and this is pre-theology. So I finished 2 years of pre-theology, and at my evaluation for that year, I was told by the rector that I was not going to be allowed to go on to theology because I did not have the charism of a diocesan priest, that I should go to a religious community or a smaller diocese. And they gave me some reasons that didn't make sense to me. They said I didn't have leadership skills to lead a parish. There was something about me that made it difficult for people to approach me. A couple of other things. And I'm convinced that these things are wrong, because one of the things that's an important thing, has been an important thing in my life for as long as I can remember, is I want to know myself. I want to know myself as accurately as I can. And as the way I knew myself then, I thought, no, you're wrong. So I actually told him at the end of the interview, I said, "Well, you're wrong about that." I said, "And you're risking losing a very good priest for the Diocese of San Diego." So I was a little bold.
It's a good thing you spoke up.
Yeah, so he told me, he invited me to meet with the bishop. And I figured I knew how that was going to go. Because he had been the bishop's secretary before he became the rector of the seminary. So I said, "Okay, I'll meet with the bishop." I met with him. And I was waiting, and he came in, and the first thing I said was, "I suppose you know why I'm here." And he said, "Well, I know what the decision was, but I don't know the reasons." So I went over the reasons. I had written it all down, and I showed it to the rector before I went to see the bishop. I said, "I want to make sure this is accurate, because I don't want to misquote you to the bishop." And he looked it over, and he said, "It's accurate." And I said, "Okay, one of the reasons was that that I don't have this charism, and I don't know what this charism is," because he never explained what it was. And the bishop told me, "Well, there are many demands made on priests in the San Diego Diocese," and I knew that. I knew priests. I said, they're in danger of becoming just functionaries. And he said, I don't know much about you." He said, "I know you have a strong contemplative side that you like to read and to think about what you've read." He said, "Because of the demands, I wouldn't have time to do the things that I like, and I wouldn't be happy." So ever since I started telling the story, I told people that the bishop told me that if I were a priest in San Diego, I wouldn't have time to pray, read, or think. So you know, when I asked about the leadership, he said, "Well, you're going to have to ask Father what he meant by that." When I asked about the charism, because I had been told that I should go to a religious community or a smaller diocese, I said to the bishop, "Well, if I don't have the charism of a diocesan priest, what does the size of the diocese have to do with it?" And he said, you can ask his father what he meant by that. Basically, he wasn't answering my questions. So I thought, what am I being told here? So I called people I knew, and one of them was Carl Keating. And I told Carl what happened, and he said to me, the day you told me you were going in the seminary here, I expected this to happen. I said, why? He said, they don't want Orthodox priests.
Yeah, San Diego, California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, San Diego's in worse condition now than it was then. I spoke to two other people who knew me for anywhere from 12 to 20 years, and I told them what was said, and every single one of them said, that's not you. And so that relieved me because I knew then that I knew myself, and I was accurate in knowing myself. So I'm thinking, what does all of this mean? And my final decision was that they were telling me lies. God doesn't deal in lies. And so I decided that since God doesn't deal in lies, he's trying to tell me, look elsewhere. So I started to look elsewhere. Some of the other seminarians, they were shocked. In fact, one of them told me this was really a nice thing to say. He said, well, if you're not going to make it, then how would any of us have a chance? That year there were four of us who were scheduled to go on to theology from the Diocese of San Diego. They sent one on. He dropped out within the first semester. Two of the other three, me being the third, they said, take time off and think about it. To me, they said, go away. right now, those other three were all priests in different dioceses. This is why San Diego has a priest shortage. What am I being told? Now, Mark Brumley, who I knew from Catholic Answers, he told me that the bishop, he said, you are an articulate Orthodox Catholic with a mind of his own. The bishop doesn't like that. And so that's when I started to look elsewhere. Other seminarians were telling their vocations directors. There was interest, and suddenly it dried up. So I was beginning to think I was being blackballed in California. Then I heard from a priest I knew. Some of your listeners may have heard of him. He's now dead, Father Ray Ryland. And I knew Father Ryland pretty well. And he told me that he had been at a conference in Syracuse. And he told my story to a couple of people. They were from the Diocese of Peoria. And he said, they said, send them to us.
Okay, we're coming up here on a break again, Father, so we're going to take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll now get back into our diocese here in Peoria, and we'll hear from Father about what occurred and happened there. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
While you may enjoy listening to our daily talk programs here on Catholic Spirit Radio, you might also crave some additional prayerful moments. For times like this, you can temporarily switch to the Spirit Radio 89.5 app or go online to CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Choose the listening option called Radio Essentials. Day and night, Radio Essentials will broadcast exclusively the Holy Mass, Rosary, Divine Mercy Chaplets, prayers, and devotionals.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You've been listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio, and we're talking to a priest from our Peoria Diocese, Father Tom Shaw, and his unique and also typical story about his move away from the church and then back into the church, and more amazingly, perhaps, into the priesthood itself. And it's been very interesting up to this time. And Father Tom is telling us about how he grew up in Brooklyn, moved to San Diego, drifted away from the church, and finally started to come back into the church, the influences on him. And now the story about how he has gotten here from San Diego into the Peoria Diocese. So we'll hear the last part of his story in this segment. I'll turn it back over to Father and let him finish.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Well, at this point, it seems as though, I don't know where to go, but it seems as though Peoria is starting to enter the picture. So I talked to Father Ray Ryland, and I said, I asked him, would you help me? And he said, sure, I'll do anything I can to help you. He got information for me, and he said, got me the name of the then vocations director. And he said, a letter would be good. He said, maybe a telegram would be better. I said, how about a phone call? He said, well, that would be good. So I called, and I got through. And I was told later on that that was practically a miracle. No one got through the first time. And I told the story, and he said, why don't you come and see us? So I went. I made a trip to Peoria, and I met then Bishop Myers. I was staying at a parish, and the pastor was busy. I didn't see him until about my second, third day there. And so he sat down and he started asking me questions, and he said, why do you want to be a priest? When I filled out the paperwork for the Diocese of Peoria, and I answered, that question came up, and my answer was, you'll have to ask God. It was his idea. So,
good answer.
That's the truth.
Yeah. Anyway, I told him the story about what I was told in San Diego about not having a charism, and then and Father Ryland's visit to Syracuse, and he said, oh, that was you? He said, I was there. I heard that story, and I said the same thing. Send him to us. So, unfortunately, he's no longer a priest, but he left. He was laicized. I without knowing it, I met the person who Father Ryland had met who wanted me to come here. And so they accepted me, and they said, what seminary you want to go to? And I said, well, you're evaluating me. You tell me. So they sent me to Kenrick Seminary in St. Louis, which is fine. Part of the reason they sent me there is because my brother John lived in St. Louis at that time. He was the president of the Rams football team.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He's retired now. He's younger than me. He's retired. So because I had a brother in St. Louis, they sent me there. Now, my problems weren't over yet. The obstacles were still there. One was the dean of students. He had a problem with me. One of the things that happened, the bookstore was run by students. And during my first semester there, the person who was running it came to my room and said, I'm leaving. Would you be willing to run the bookstore? I said, sure. I said, when are you leaving? I figured you're just going to stay a month or so. He said, tomorrow. I said, okay. So I went to the rector, then rector, who's now the Archbishop of in Omaha, Archbishop. I'm getting old. I'm forgetting names.
That happens.
Archbishop Lucas.
Okay.
In
Omaha.
I hate to tell you, it gets worse too.
Yeah. Anyway, mm-hmm. I said to him, look, this is what I want to do, because the bookstore was basically a little room with a few books, a few textbooks in it. I said, I'd like to turn it into a real bookstore. And I laid out plans, and he said, okay, it sounds like you know what you're doing. Go ahead. And so I did, and it was very successful. The students used to call me the tempter because they didn't know there were so many good books out there, and I did. So I brought them into the bookstore. Anyway, I was still having problems because the dean of students had a problem with me. He told me at one point, you're spending too much time in the bookstore. I said, why, are my grades suffering? He said, no. Well, how am I spending too much time in the bookstore? And then he told me later on, you're too friendly with the faculty. And he said, and I said, well, what do you expect? I'm older than all of them, and I'm older than most of them. So, and he said, well, you know, you might talk about something that, you might hear something that's about the seminary that you shouldn't say to anyone else. And I said, you think you have nothing better to talk about than what goes on in the seminary? Then later on, they decided I had a psychological issue. And so I fought that and succeeded. I was finally recommended for priesthood unanimously. And so the night before my first Mass, it was before my first Mass, which was at the cathedral in Peoria, I was with my family, including family from New York, and I said to them, well, I'm going to start my homily tomorrow, because one thing I wanted to do, this is not traditional, I wanted to preach at my first Mass. Normally you have someone else preach, because they figure you're too nervous to do it. Now, I'd been a supervisor. I knew I'd spoken to people. And I also wanted to, because there were members of my family who I thought might never get a chance to hear me preach if they didn't hear it then. And I wanted to do it for them. And that turned out to be true. Some of them didn't. So I was telling them, I'm going to start my homily by saying, can you believe this? You know, here I am standing here. And they said, wait a minute, you know, we always thought you were going to be a priest. You're the one who didn't believe it. So the next day, I started my homily by telling that story, and I said, you know, and they were right. I said, but they ruined my opening. And they were right.
Everybody could believe it, but you couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I was the one who didn't believe it, you know, until, you know, God drilled it into me, you know.
Well, this is such a good story in a sense, because you can just see all the signs and things that are pointing you and pushing you and pulling you and tugging you along the way. And I think, you know, the Father, you probably were prepared to become a priest in a way that most people are not.
Probably not, you know. But I would say to anyone out there who's thinking about it, who's run into obstacles, you know, if you're convinced that God is leading you here, don't give up. You know, because the obstacles I ran into, I mean, it was obstacle after obstacle. You know, I don't have the charism of a diocesan priest. I have a psychological problem. I spend too much time in the bookstore, and whatever, on and on.
Well, you know how you see sometimes somebody walking down the street, especially a small person with a dog, and you wonder who's walking who.
Yeah.
And makes your story makes you wonder, you know, who was walking, you know.
Well, let me conclude with this. Yeah, I said earlier about some of the things I was getting interested in there, but for the grace of God, do I? So let me conclude with this. Here, by the grace of God, am I.
Very good conclusion, because you can see the grace all the way through your story. It just even in places maybe where you weren't aware of it, we here listening to it could certainly see it. And I'm sure the folks out there listening to the program will also understand that there was a lot going on in your life. And it might be a very good inspiration for a lot of people who are trying to discern whether they should be a priest or not, or maybe don't even have the slightest idea until something hits them in the head. And your story may do just that.
Well, I hope so, you know. And one of the things that when I was at Kenrick, there was an older fellow who came into the seminary, and then he left after a semester. And I said, you know, I wish he had spoken to me. I could have, because he said, I think I'm too old for this. Because when you're older, you have a certain way of looking at things that when you're 45, that you don't look at it when you were 25.
No, you don't.
And I wish I had a chance to speak to him. I might have been able to change his mind a little bit. So
well, certainly, you know, as we get older or mature, however you want to put it, we're older than you are. But I see the older the priests that come have a late vocation, they relate to people much easier.
Yeah, that's true.
Because you've been through some things in life. You fought some of those battles.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, also I think your studies in medieval, you know, society and medieval literature and history, because to me, the medieval age was such a dynamic and interesting age. I mean, this idea somehow or another that it was a dark age.
It was not dark at all.
Some of the greatest thinking, inventions, and so forth took place during the medieval period, and most people, I don't think, realize or understand that. So
no, they don't know that. The medieval philosophers and theologians were not afraid to ask any question and follow it to where it led.
Exactly.
It always led to God. Whereas modern schools of philosophy, they won't ask certain questions.
No, there's so much, you know, there is so much in modern philosophy that is simply assumed and never actually proven especially Aristotelian, a lot of ideas that maybe, you know, we can't discuss here, but maybe sometime, you know, we can have you back on and discuss some of those things that certainly would be interesting.
Well, I will say one thing, and I'd like people to think about this. When I was in college the first time, I was absolutely in awe of Thomas Aquinas, but I was in awe of his intellectual achievement. I did not understand, at the end of his life, Thomas stopped writing, because he had that famous mystical experience in which he said, everything I've written seems a straw compared to what I've seen and what's been revealed to me. And I thought, I don't understand that. How could he say that about this tremendous intellectual achievement? Well, now I know something more about it. I didn't know anything about the spiritual, so to speak, at that time. Now I do know something about it, and I understand what Thomas was saying.
Yeah, those would be some interesting things to talk about, and hopefully we can have you back on the show for some of that. another question that, you know, that I brought up when we first started is, why is it? I mean, I know I was so ignorant of a lot of challenges to the Catholic faith when, you know, I was younger and really didn't learn the answers to those questions. Probably I stayed faithful to the faith more or less out of just pure habit, you know, putting one foot in front of the other, just plodding, you know, sort of without a lot of fervor or anything else, because it's just something that you do, you know, you're raised that way. And that says a lot. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, because I learned that, you know, and maybe you did too. You weren't able to play sports, but the same thing in sports, that's what practice does. I'll never forget the first football game I ever played in. You know, if I couldn't believe when I saw films of it that I was actually doing the right things, because my mind went totally blank.
I tell people now it's dangerous to be too intellectual.
Right. So,
because it can take you away from faith.
Yeah.
Because you think you know all the answers, and God, when you develop a spiritual life, God shows you things that you could have had no way of knowing.
Especially when you're young. Yeah, I think I've read somewhere where, you know, and then I think, too, the theology should be restored to the Queen of Sciences. But on the other hand, we should never ever forget that the simple message of the gospel is primary before that. So,
right.
Those are important things.
Yeah.
But, is there, you know, something that the church can, we've had so many people in RCIA, and my wife and I taught RCIA a number of years ago. And they know the what of the Catholic faith, but they don't know the why of the Catholic faith, and that's what we try to teach, because so many, I mean, I had a gentleman once that went through Catholic grade school, high school, and college, but he couldn't defend the faith from Protestant friends that he had that were constantly sort of ribbing him about it, you know. And then when he took the RCIA class, he was just overjoyed because for the first time in his life, he said he could defend the faith. And, you know, is that something the church should address more?
I think so, yeah. You know, we try to teach the faith, but we don't teach, as you say, the why. Why is this true? You know, why do you believe what you believe? You know, it was conversion stories that did a lot of it for me. So read conversion stories.
Exactly. And stories are interesting, and people enjoy stories. So we should have a lot more. I think we should have more history, too.
And, absolutely. I love history. And there should be more history. And I incorporate history in my homilies.
Good. Then explains things, what was going on at the time. I think that's fantastic.
And I'll say one other thing. Get to know the saints. Because the saints are us. They learned, as we all need to learn, to make the right decisions. If we don't know God, we won't make the right decisions. So get to know the saints. During the week, almost every time we have a saints' day, I talk about the saints.
Yeah, that's good.
And the unique thing is they learn, you know,
how
much of a failure they are. You don't start to understand that until you get older, you know.
Someone once told Dorothy Day that she was a saint. She said, "Don't make a plaster statue out of me."
Yeah, right. Because you realize all the shortcomings, failures, and how much you fall short.
Right.
And I think
exactly.
That's what the saints understand.
They understand, and they kept at it.
So,
just as I kept at trying to become a priest.
At any rate, we're going to close our program, and Lynn and I always close our program with a prayer to St. Michael. So we're going to have to stop here. Father, it's been wonderful having you on
and listening
to your story.
Would you give us your blessing, too?
Yeah, give us your blessing before we close the program. We'll just do that instead. So we would really appreciate it.
Okay.
And I hope we can have you back on. And we'll talk to you a little bit after the program ends. So stay with us for a little bit.
Hang on.
All right. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Father, we ask you to send your blessing upon Bob and Lynn and upon their program. May it continue to be a strong means of drawing people into your one true church and to help them to understand why it is the one true church and why we believe what we do. And may their apostolate continue and be very, very successful in this. We bless them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit.
Amen. Well, thank you, Father. It's been wonderful talking with you. I hope everybody out there has enjoyed the program, and we will see you next week, and we'll talk to you then.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at CatholicSpiritRadio.com or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.